Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What is up, Gypsy Gang? We are back for another episode of the Gypsy Tales podcast. And my guest today, bam, I told you we'd have three dope mountain bike riders this week. Podcast number two is with the man himself, Jack Moyer. He's a avid member of the Gypsy Gang, and we have been wanting to make this one happen for a while. Turns out quarantine is a good time to get the boys locked away before they get into their off-season antics. Jack Moyer is a professional downhill and enduro rider. He has one of the coolest styles on a mountain bike, loves riding moto. He put in a sixth-place performance at the World Downhill Champs this year, which is incredible, and he got on the box a bunch of time in the Enduro Championship. So stoked to finally get Jack on. But before we get into that, just got to give a shout out to our sponsors and go kind of hand in hand with Jack, because the guys at Lusty Industries had a pretty massive role to play in Jack's early days on the circuit. And our first sponsor is Albeck Co. I spoke about them in the Brooke McDonald podcast, but the boys are finally dropping their epic bag company, Albeck Co. And we're very, very, very excited to be a part of it. Personally, for me, Johnny McLean is a guy that has done so much for me. So it feels awesome to be able to proudly rep a company that he has founded from the ground up. And nobody in the world knows as much about slinging bags as Johnny McLean and the crew at Lusty. So stay tuned. We're going to be dropping their new stuff when it comes. I've been running their bag since February this year, and I am excited to get the actual gear bag for moto. But these dudes are doing bike bags. They're doing everything. And I'm super proud of not only Johnny, but their whole team. And this is going to be really cool to watch it unfold. It makes me feel proud that this kind of level of product is coming out of Australia. So you can follow them on Instagram at Albeck Co, A-L-B-E-K-C-O, for more information as the products drop. We're also brought to you by the guys at Ride Wrap, and they are a company that specializes in bicycle protection accessories. They're designed, engineered, and tested with proprietary technology in Whistler, BC. But they're also producing in mountain bike communities around the world. And that means the work is being done by mountain bikers. They want to not only get the product out to the riders as quick as possible, but also play a big part in supporting riding communities around the world. This is really a by riders, for riders setup. And these are the kind of companies that we love working with on the podcast. And they're the kind of companies that are worth supporting as a consumer. If you want to find out more about Ride Wrap, you can head to riderwrap.ca, or you can give them a follow on Instagram at Ride Wrap. They offer different degrees of protection and bike frame kits with self-healing vinyl, ensuring that scrapes, wear, and chips simply do not make it to the factory paint of your brand new whip. Next, we're brought to you by the legends at Crush Oz. And if you listen to the Brooke McDonald podcast, which I'm pretty sure that you did, you would know that these guys were our first ever sponsor. And we just mentioned that Ride Wrap is by riders for riders, and Crush Oz is absolutely no different. They hail out of the high country in Victoria, Australia. Crush is a family-owned business driven by their passion for riding bikes and the adventures that they take us on. And man, We have been with these guys since day one, and I would just recommend you going to crushoz.com, getting their bike care bucket. It comes with rapid wash. It comes with their premium bike wash. It's got a drivetrain cleaner in there as well, and an after wash. They've got a chamois. They've got like the scrubbing brush deal. I really do take pride in washing my bikes these days, and the Crush products definitely make it a lot easier. So crushoz.com. And of course, we cannot get into the episode without thanking our regulars, the guys at MX Store. You can head to mxstore.com.au. Damn, I don't know if I need anything from MX Store this week. I probably need to. You know what I do, actually? I do. I need to go buy a chain breaker, and I'm probably going to go do that right now. mxstore.com.au, they do in-store pickup, which is what I'm about to do. I'll go do that click and collect. But if you don't live in Burleigh, they got same-day shipping, so get on there. That's all you need. We're brought to you by the guys at Boost Oz. You can head to boost.com.au to jump on board with Australia's best prepaid network. That's an objective fact, in my opinion. We're also brought to you by the guys at Crick's Tweed. You can head to crickstweed.com.au if you need to get a new Triton like mine, new Renault, new Subi. They got it all there. Also brought to you by the Glove Lord himself, Sammy at Fist. You can head to fisthandwear.com. New stock dropping soon, including new Gypsy Tales gloves, which everyone keeps asking about. Dixon dropped their DBK flannel. So shout out to Twitch and the boys. You can head to dixonquality.com.au. Use the code RAMPTHIEF. Also, thank you to the guys at Rival Inc. I have had a bunch of people asking me about my kit for the 350, but it's just one of their stock kits. So if you go to rivalinkdesignco.com and you go to KDM kits and scroll down, you'll see it on there. We just made some minor adjustments, and that's all it needs. We're also brought to you by the guys at Maxxis. I currently, after Rocky, I put the intermediate tire on because we're going to be doing a lot of riding on our road trip, and I really, really like that tire, actually. Didn't think I'd like it as much as the soft for obvious reasons. But yeah, so far, so good. And I actually really appreciated that tire come MX Farm. It was real windy the last time I rode there. The water just didn't stay in the track, so I kind of ended up with the perfect tire. Also brought to you finally by the guys at Motorex. Not just oils for KTM, guys, so you can run that in any bike. They have an insane manufacturing process to ensure the highest quality. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on Instagram. Give us a share if you can. Jack's a lord. Do it for his sake. Not even for mine, you know. And leave us a review on iTunes, because that does help a lot. And Gypsy Gang merch at gypsytales.com. Thanks so much, guys, and enjoy this podcast with the legendary Jack Moyer. The gypsy. Gang and they come and get gypsy. Gang and they come and get gang. Gang. I'm at a gypsy. Gypsy gang. Gang. I'm at a gypsy. Jack Moyer, welcome to the podcast, you absolute legend. What is going on?
Thanks, mate. Not much, eh? Just cruising in quarantine at the moment. Locked in a hotel for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, how's that all going so far?
Yeah, it's all good. Just playing a lot of Xbox, eh?
Yeah,
feeling like a bit of a zombie, just sleeping and slobbing around.
What games are you playing at the moment? What's got you frothing?
I've been playing Fortnite because a bunch of my buddies play it, but I suck at it. I've got COD on the download, but it's taken. I'm on the fourth day now. It's like 105 gig or something, and I got pretty bad Wi-Fi, so it should be ready like maybe today. And then I haven't got it yet, but I want to get the Supercross game.
Yeah, right. So, I might be able to get you the hookup on the Supercross game, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Might be able to get you a code.
We were battling in, where was it? Like the last race in Leogang in Maribor with the other Kenyan boys. We had the old Reflex game going, doing hot laps.
Oh, dude, yeah. That was the one, eh? The old Reflex.
Yeah, it's still sick. But yeah, that new Supercross one's cool too.
Yeah, so whereabouts are you doing your quarantine?
I'm in Adelaide, eh? Because apparently it was real hard to get into Sydney.
Like, yeah, right.
They only let so many people in each week, and there's way more flights going to Sydney than Adelaide. So I think this is what I've heard. I don't know for sure, but people are saying they're cancelling all the normal tickets and taken the business class to pay for the airfares. So like with more planes going into Sydney, they keep less economy tickets, whereas Adelaide's less planes, but I think it's around the same amount of people. So it's easy to get in here.
So did you have to do the whole business thing? Like you had to fly business over to...
No.
So you could actually get an economy flight?
Yeah, over was real easy. It's coming back that's hard. I had premium economy on the way back, but basically nothing too special. And
yeah, I heard that you had to do, like, because you say that you're going for business, you had to make it a business class ticket to get the flights.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's lots of stories going around. I had heaps of people telling me, like, there's, like, 25,000 Australians stuck overseas or something. And, like, even a couple of people I know have been stuck there since March. But
yeah, I don't know. Really?
Gabe, my team manager, just said he booked me a flight like a week before I left. First flight he booked, it went ahead and I got home. So I might have got real lucky. I don't know.
Yeah, man. It's one of those weird... It's just the weirdest time, eh? Like, and you try and get advice from people and it seems like everyone's got a different story. And
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm just glad I'm home, eh? I would have been pretty salty if I was stuck there. Like, already been over there for a while racing, so super keen to get home.
Yeah, so when did you actually go over to Europe from Oz?
Start of August.
Yeah, right. Oh, so it has been a minute, eh?
Yeah, it hasn't been too long, but it feels like way longer when you, I don't know, there's been a lot of traveling, a lot of racing, and then all the like corona regulations and protocol at the events is like crazy. It like wears you out. You just always got to be somewhere like doing tests or, yeah.
Yeah. So what was that like? Like what, I guess, explain the new normal at racing compared to sort of what it used to be?
It's just like, super strict, getting into all the pit areas, getting onto the gondolas. Like you've always got to have your mask. If you don't have your mask, you're not allowed in. So like I forgot my mask 50,000 times. And then you got to get like a test every time before you get to an event and when you get to the event. And then since we're having back-to-back events, you had to get tests before you left that for the next one. So it's like during a practice day or like qualifying day, like it's pretty full on.
And what about, like, did they have limits on people that were allowed to be at events and stuff like that? Was the media normal? Like
it was just like team staff and riders. And then, even the media, like they couldn't have media guys in the pit area. Like they had to be in their own bubble. So like, allowed on the side of the track and in the media room, but they can't come into the pits and take photos and do interviews. So yeah, it's way different, but I mean, at least we were still racing.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many sports that just weren't able to do literally anything this year. And you guys were able to get some in. What was the deal? So this year you signed with Canyon to do the Enduro, like the EWS series, right? And was downhill like in your plans, but you weren't going to do the whole series? Or I guess what was before the whole corona deal? What was your 2020 plans anyway?
Yeah, so I got stuffed around a bit last off season with my downhill contract, and then I picked up the Enduro one real last minute. So it was my plan to do Enduro, and then it was cool because Kenyon have a real good downhill team, so they like, it was part of the deal. They let me do a couple downhill races. So that was always the plan, to do the full Enduro and a couple downhills.
Yeah. So how did that all work? Like you were just sort of, you thought your contract was sweet, but it wasn't. And then you ended up having to find something last minute. Is that sort of what went down?
Yeah. I won't get into it too much, but
yeah, that's cool.
I signed a letter of intent with a company, which I guess kind of commit to working with each other for the next year.
Yeah.
Or it was for, next couple of years. And then, like, while I was waiting for the contract, they were kind of stuffing me around a bit. And then on the date I was supposed to get the contract, they just rang me up and said, we're canceling the whole team. And that was, like, real late in the off season, and every every other team that was interested in me that year had already found riders, so it's pretty much left with nothing, And then it was lucky because one of the Kenyan enduro riders decided to leave like real last minute, so that opened up a spot there, and
So what like, was it almost a bit of a blessing in disguise in some ways? Because, like, dude, you absolutely been ripping the enduro bike. And, I mean, I haven't followed super closely, but I feel like you did pretty well in the EWSs that you did, right?
Yeah, I was super happy with that. I, like I said that at the beginning of the year, I always wanted to do enduro because I've done a couple before and went pretty well at them. So I always wanted to do a full season of it. I just didn't think it would be, like, so soon. Because I also still feel like I didn't really get to where I wanted in downhill. Well, I did, and then I got hurt again and kind of wanted to get back there. But so it was, I never would have picked to do the enduro if I had the choice. But now that it happened, it's turned out pretty good. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. So
it's good to be able to do both, eh?
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, is that sort of the plan going forward now that, like, maybe you're just going to sort of try and do both things, or do you think that you sort of, it still pays to be like a downhill only sort of specialist? Or
no, I think I've signed a 2-year for the enduro, so I want to do that again. And since I went all right, like, just with one off season of training for enduro and like not much, like, much experience racing it, I think if I keep it up I could go pretty well, so I want to do that again. But then I still definitely do a couple of the downhill races next year.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'll focus on like the full enduro season, and then it's hard because you can't really do all of both. Eddie Masters did it 1 year, as many as both, but you get burnt out so quickly. It's just so much racing and traveling.
Yeah,
you gotta like pick and choose, eh?
Yeah, dude, just the travel alone, man. Like, because it's not like you're going to, you know, it's like the US. If it was in the US, you could get away with it because it's just like one big country that you're kind of cruising across. You know, like hitting major airports. But like the stuff that you guys are doing is just like in the middle of fucking nowhere, crossing borders and like multiple countries and visas, and yeah, it'd become pretty hectic.
Yeah, you think, I always think about the moto guys and how they race every weekend for so long. I'm like, how the fuck do they do that? But I guess it's gnarly, but I guess like there's not as much traveling, so you probably don't have that side of it wearing down on you. But
yeah, it's still crazy. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's probably just different, you know, like a pick your poison sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, dude, what you guys would have to deal with customs, and then the other thing too that gets sketchy for you guys is that you can actually like lose your bikes and shit. You know, the semi ain't getting lost on the way to Millville.
Yeah. Yeah. For the like the big teams, it's pretty safe because we've got like trucks going to all the races. But yeah, when you're like, you know, Ollie and Benny's were a couple Aussie races. They were at Maribor World Cup last weekend and both their bikes got lost.
What?
It's like, yeah, just such a stitch up when you work so hard to pay, and like they're privateering and paying to go to all the World Cups, and then the airlines just lose their bikes. It sucks.
But yeah,
it's pretty good for us because we got bikes over there and the trucks are going to all the races.
Yeah, that'd take a little bit out of it then, I guess. So I didn't get to watch all of the world champs this year. I watched your run, I watched a few other of the boys' runs. But it looked like a legit downhill world champs in terms of like tracks and conditions. But it sort of seemed like a bunch of people were like complaining about it as well, which seemed kind of weird.
Yeah, it was definitely like probably the toughest conditions I've raced, like a World Cup for sure. It was like snowing all day on race day. Like you left the start gate, I don't know if you could see it properly on the coverage, but you left the start gate and it was like snowflakes in there. No, so that was pretty gnarly. And then the whole top half was pretty good because it was like in the open, so the snow or it like melts and the rain kind of washes the thick mud away. But then into the woods, it's like, I guess it hits the trees and then just slowly trickles in, so it just stays wet but doesn't clear off. So it was just like the thickest like peanut butter mud. Like the girls' bikes were, the wheels were clogging up and not spinning. And like,
dude,
my mechanic seen it on the live feed or something. So like right before my run, he took my mud guard off and put like a little tire, like a little tube mud guard in between the forks, just to get a bit more clearance. Like it was pretty gnarly stuff like that. But yeah, I think there was a lot of people complaining about the track after we walked it, which
was dry, right?
Pardon?
Which was pretty much dry when you walked it. Like people were complaining about
it. It was wet, but it wasn't thick mud.
Yeah, so okay.
You could tell how gnarly it was going to be to ride, but I feel like with Leo Gang, it's like a real straightforward bike park track, and every year for like the last 8 years, we're always whinging and asking for some more techie sections. And they finally put the techie sections in and everyone was whinging a bit. So I was like, what the fuck?
Like, what are we doing here, boys?
I don't know. I guess I feel like that stuff suits me better and I like riding it better. So if they like the other stuff better and it suits them better, obviously they're going to whinge. Like I've been whinging the last few years about how easy the track was. Because I feel like when a track's easy, it's like, it's actually more dangerous than you got to be. It's actually harder to go good because no one's separate. There's nothing to separate anyone. Like, everyone's riding so fast and so on edge, like, that it's just dangerously fast. Yeah. Whereas when there's technical sections, there's like, it's more, there's more risky lines and stuff that the risk when you crash is not as high. Like, you're not going as high speed. And
yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's like the same thing where, like you think of on a moto track, it's like a big set of whoops. It's like, yeah, they're gnarly and they do separate the really, really good guys. And it's like, you can't just, or just like rough tracks in general, you know, like you look at, you like Lommel, like no one's complaining that Lommel's too rough. It's like the good guys want that shit to get like that, because that's where you will see like a world champion emerge, when the track's as gnarly as it gets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just more technical stuff, I think, separates the riders a bit more. And I don't know, it still had some of the fast, flat out like bike park stuff up top. So I think it was a real good mix.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dude, it's so crazy too, like the level that downhill has got to now. Like Chris Kovarik posted his first World Cup win on Instagram the other day, and I watched that run, and it's like tiny handlebars and you know, like
tiny bikes.
Yeah, tiny bikes. The speed's just nowhere near what it is now. And like, man, the way that you guys hang it out on those courses is just fucking like out of control these days. So it's just like, yeah, I mean, you kind of, it's like, you're not making, I think you could think of it in the wrong way by saying like slowing the tracks down, but it's like there's the fast guys still find a way to make the slow stuff fast. It's not like everyone has to tiptoe through these sections. Like it creates opportunity for the fast guys to really take control.
Yeah. And I think the main reason like everyone's gone so fast now, well, it's, there's like, anyone in the top 20, I think if you look through, has probably had a podium or could like be on the podium. So you literally can't have a safe run and go good, because one of those other 20, 30 guys is going to have a good run. Like even if 10 crash, like it's just, you've just got to, everyone just hangs it out because it's impossible to go good if you don't. So it's pretty crazy how those top guys can do that consistently every weekend.
Yeah, like, so you got six at the World Champs, right? Like,
yeah, so I had a quali run that I thought was pretty average. I just stayed on the bike and I got six. And I was like, oh, sweet, I'll just do that in racing. So I just did the same thing, had a clean run where I knew I wouldn't crash. It wasn't, didn't set the world on fire, but I was just trying to get a good result because I hadn't done downhill in a whole year. And but it, like, there was plenty of guys who would have been faster than me if they stayed on. But that was the thing with that track. You had to stay on. Heaps of, so many people crashed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, to get six at the Worlds, like, was that as fast as you could go? Or are you just literally, trying to put in a time? And, like, how do you gauge that shit in downhill to even know, because it's like, yeah, it's a sprint and you're trying to go as fast as you can the whole time, but like you literally can't go as fast as you can the whole time. Like there's got to be these where you're sort of piecing stuff together.
It's not as fast as I could have went, but like anyone can say, oh,
anyone could go
as fast as they could, crash and say, oh, if I didn't crash, I would have won. Like,
yeah,
who knows? If I tried to push a little bit harder, I might have just lost it on a route or something. Like, I know it's not the fastest, like, I rode that bottom section at all, but a full run that was clean and I stayed up, like, that's all I was really trying to do. I wasn't, like, Loic or someone who was expected to win and going for the win. Like, he can't do what I did and have a safe run. He has to lay it all on the line and I don't know. It's different with those conditions. There's no way I could have done what I did if it was dry and just have a safe run. Like, because less people would crash. You gotta like ride a lot faster and be more precise when it's dry. You can't make any mistakes. So and I think that's I think that's like one of the reasons people were complaining about the track. If it was dry, that bottom section would have been a lot faster, would have rode better, and it was just because it was so wet and sticky that people were kind of kicking up a stink. It wasn't really riding that good.
Yeah. That's interesting what you said about, like, Loic and, you know, like, Loic and Gwyn and those boys that are, like, way up the top, that they almost can't have a safe run like you did. So are those guys...
Yeah.
And do you think that that's why those top guys separate themselves in a way, because it's like once you become one of those guys and there's that expectation on you, it almost like forces your hand, and then when you've got a group of dudes that are at the top and they're doing that, that's what sort of like pushes that whole sort of like the whole pace forward.
Yeah, I guess, like, I don't know, I probably would have, yeah, I only really had that approach because I haven't done a downhill race in a whole year, and then I also hadn't went that good the year before. So I just wanted to put a good result down.
Yeah.
Just blow it all away. But yeah, I think, yeah, those guys, when you're going for the win like that and all of them are doing it each weekend, some are going to crash and some are going to have a good run. And that's what just keeps elevating it. Yes.
So, what did you like, well, do you like the world champs just in general? Because like, I wish there was, I guess like motocross nations is sort of like that, but like there's never like a world champ in moto. And when I was racing downhill, like, fuck man, the world champs was just so sick because it was just one day. And you know, like you could be a guy that, you know, like special shit happens at world champs, like Danny Hart for instance.
And yeah, or like, Reese Wilson this year.
It's true, huh? But like that is so, it's such like a special event for that kind of stuff. And like, I don't know, where does the world champ sort of rank for you as like a downhill guy?
Yeah, it's like, it's the pinnacle of our sport. So I was always like, if I was doing enduro and I got selected for the world champs team, I was always going to race it. Like, same with next year. Like, it's like, yeah, the coolest race to do. You get to represent your country and you always get like all the sponsors do mad kit and bikes. It's always cool. Like racing with green and gold shit. It's mad.
Yeah. No, it's such a sick event. I wonder, like, I don't know whether something like that could work in moto, but fuck, it'd be so sick to have like,
yeah, you know, I guess one it's day. Like the nations, eh?
Yeah.
But there's not one person, so I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if it'd work, but like, yeah, imagine if there was just like the 450 world champ and you just had like all the boys one day were just threw down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what also makes world champs so crazy to watch. Like literally that one run and you can be the world champion, so people are throwing down.
It's yeah, crazy. And there's an art to like the headspace of it too. You know, like, yeah, that, like just that one day, because you know, you can manage a series and you can sort of be like super consistent over a year and you know all the tracks and you know, put together like a season. But when it comes to the world champs, it's just, that's just like straight nuts.
Yeah, that's why it's so crazy how Loic just won. Like, I think he won like four in a row before this year.
Yeah,
it's like, how do you even do that? When he, and each time he's winning by like the smallest margins, like under like 0.5 and stuff like that. How do you do that?
Yeah, consistently.
At four, just yeah, it's crazy.
And didn't the one before he won, he crashed like, and he was winning as well. Like he was up at the last split, and he like washed out coming into one of the sort of bottom sections of the track.
Fuck, I don't know. He's done that at a couple like World Cups where he's been up and washed right at the bottom. So
yeah, maybe it was a World Cup that I was thinking of.
Could have been, yeah.
Dude, I remember I filmed with Loic in, I don't know, it was years ago. It was actually when he was still on LaPierre. And he was in Temecula with One Industries. Oh, sorry, 100%. And I remember watching him ride a mountain bike. And like, I've seen...
Wait, hold up. I've got to do that. Doctor's check.
Oh, sweet. At a certain time that you have to do it in, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So am I missing any details in there that would explain it better?
Yeah, so you just got your bunch of stages, which are all timed, like you said, and then all the liaisons and climbs you do, and yeah, you just got to get there before your start time, otherwise you get a penalty. I guess it's like the same as moto enduro.
Yeah
I think after, I haven't done one, but speaking to dad a bit, he used to race and he says it's kind of the same stuff.
And so who are the dudes that typically do the best in enduro, like, and like, so how does that fitness element play into it? Is it just like the downhill stages are like so long and tiring that you, if you're not fit for the ups, that you're just not going to be able to like put the energy in to go fast down? Or like, what's the sort of balance that you need to sort of find to be good at enduro, do you think?
Yeah, you got to be a lot fitter than downhill, I think. Not like just overall, like for staying fresh for the whole day, even if you were fast on the downhills and you hadn't done all the base training, like you're going to be pretty tired just from the pedaling in between. And then that's if you've got lucky, and because some of the races are actually pretty much all downhill stages, but a lot of them, like the last couple we did this year, had, there was one with like maybe 3 minutes straight of kind of flat pedaling with a tiny bit of downhill and lots of uphills, like,
oh, and that was like after, an actual like, stage
in a stage, yeah, like after, yeah, 3 minutes of downhill. So you, like, yeah, you've got to be super fit for that stuff, and that's on top of like riding all day. So obviously you got to be able to ride, you got to be good technically, but the fitness is a lot bigger part than downhill.
Yeah, because
you just can't keep up,
yeah,
on those big pinchy climbs and flat sections if you don't have the fitness.
And so does that shit, like, has that come easy to you, like in terms of the training? Like, is it stuff that you, were you like always pretty into training? Like, cause I know with Wynn, like anytime I've hung around that dude,
like, yeah, he loves
he just
pain session, eh?
Bro, like we did the filming in Derby, and we'd film all day, and like I was pretty cooked just from walking up the hills with cameras and filming, and like we get back and he's, yeah, like, all right, gotta go for a ride, it's fucking pissing down rain, and he just goes and smashes out like 50 k's on his mountain bike. I'm just like, what the fuck are you, yeah, doing, dude?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was one of those people that just fucking loves to train and get in the hurt box. Like, I'm not about that, but I make sure I get all my training done even though I hate it. So I think I enjoy the long rides too. I don't know, maybe just because I haven't done too much of them, whereas like I've been training for downhill sort of the last, 8 years? I think my first year overseas was. So it's like same old shit for 8 years, sprints, gym, that stuff. So it's good to mix it up and go on some big missions. You, yeah, ride your bike a lot more. I'm not frothing on the so much road bike,
yeah,
but the trainer for the Kenyan team's a ex-pro road bike guy, I think. So he just loves road, so we do a lot of road. But
so you're going basically on the advice with your training from a guy that Kenyon actually employs.
Yeah, Kenyon, he trains the whole Kenyon team, like enduro team. And I think he trains one of the downhill guys, the junior.
Yeah, right. Kenyon's a pretty gnarly company, eh?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, what was it like going from you know, where you were to working with a company that's like that? Because they sort of seem like they've got a pretty, I don't know, like a pretty different approach to just like their whole company.
Yeah, I mean, they still seem to like, I mean, I suppose the image they put out is like pretty proper and corporate, but they still like seem to have like a good sense of humor and stuff with all the social media and like the marketing and stuff like that. So I don't know. I haven't been to Germany and hung out with them all yet because of all the Corona stuff. So haven't really been there, but
fair enough. So when you get back home and you've got your downtime, you're probably, do you reckon you'd be one of the fastest moto mountain bikers in the country?
Nah, I don't know.
I reckon. I'm going to claim it for you.
You reckon?
Oh, Baxter Maywald's he fucking shreds pretty hard too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nah, I reckon Dino.
Has Dean got you, reckon?
Dino a couple of times. He's pretty fast.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think.
And then I'm just a trail bandit, dude.
Yeah. You're the fastest headlight warrior.
Shit, eh? Yeah.
You're the fastest headlight warrior then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon we need to do some kind of like Aussie mountain bike moto race. Because
I've seen that on Instagram.
You got Sam Hill.
Yeah, he'd be fast. I think Connor's pretty fast as well.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Yeah, then you got Dino, you got Baxter.
Troy rides too.
Yeah, Troy. I feel like, yeah.
You know Jake Newell?
Yeah. Oh, dude.
He's fast, yeah. He smokes me.
So, Jake Newell, I know his older brother, Troy, super well.
Oh, yeah, you were saying that.
Yeah, so when...
he's good on a moto.
Yeah, because, dude, Troy's pretty good on a moto, too. He doesn't really ride much anymore, but there were a couple times where we just had, like, little track days in America, and we were all just like, Jesus, Troy fucking sends it.
Yeah, I think they grew up racing, so.
I feel like we might have to do that at the mid-2K race.
Oh, yeah. Have a two-stroke thing.
Yeah, have like a mountain bike celebrity race.
When's that? Where's it at?
Well, it's going to be at the island, so you've got
sick.
Yeah, you're going to have...
the road, boy.
Yeah, you're going to have...
track advantage.
Have you rode there before?
No, I don't even do the big track there. This is fucking gnarly jumps.
Yeah,
I just do the, what's it called? The middle track.
Oh, yeah. I haven't even been there.
I love that track.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, the main one's got, it's got some jumps. I don't need to do them.
What's the
risk versus reward? Nothing in it for me.
Yeah.
I'm a sketchy dog jumping a motorway.
Yeah, well, that's because you're on a...
It just feels so heavy. And I like having a throttle there in case you need to lift the front up or something, but that's about the only thing I like about it.
Yeah, well, I'm the same. I can't jump fucking mountain bikes these days, eh? There's just nothing there in the air. And it's like, if you fuck it up in any way off the lip, that's what's happening in the air.
Yeah.
There's
you can lean a bit and that's about it. Well, you can deploy the stiff legs too and hope that's enough to stop you, but yeah. There's no throttle.
I did this trail in Lake Tahoe called Toads.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like a fucking mission, dude. It was like a 30-something K ride just to do this downhill. And we did the whole thing, all these big rock gardens and shit. I was like, this is pretty unreal. Got down the bottom, there's just these tiny tabletops. And there was three of them in a row. And on the last one, I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. I was like, oh, fuck, I'm doing a collarbone here for sure. And then
did you go over the bars?
Nah, saved it. Like, well, I didn't save it. It just, when I fucked it up, I just didn't fuck it up quite bad enough. But I was just straight leg, straight arm, just like, nah.
Yeah,
nah,
that's
nah,
straight
nah,
leg.
Nah.
That's scary, eh?
I was just like, oh, fuck, I've cooked this. But then I walked up to one of the boys and I was like, fuck, man, I swear to God, I almost died. Like, that was a broken collarbone for sure. Two seconds later, the guy behind me that was in our crew, fucking same thing, breaks his collarbone.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's pretty common for mountain bikes,
the old collarbone. I've done a few of those bad boys.
Yeah, they're just a shit bone, to be honest. A bit of a flaw in the programming, really.
Yeah.
And so you'll, bit of moto downtime when you're home, bit of surfing downtime, you reckon? I feel like you could definitely make the claim for one of the best surfers, mountain bike surfers.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone in Oz surfs from mountain biking. I think Troy and his mechanic do a bit. Dino's a big surfer bro now.
Dino is like...
We took him out a couple of times when he was down. He loves it.
What is Dino like nowadays? Because I'm going to say he's pushing into spirit animal territory.
Yeah, he's a crossover between pro mountain biker and spirit animal. And surfer guy.
Oh, I fucking love it, eh?
I love Dino. He's a mad dog.
He's doing some cool shit, isn't he?
Yeah. He's one of a kind.
He honestly is one of a fucking kind. For sure. Yeah, so what do you reckon? Bit of surfing in Newey, bit of mountain biking, bit of moto. Is that sort of just the program you like to run when you're doing the old downtime?
Yeah, I normally have a bit of time off the mountain bike, but yeah, the WR's definitely coming out for some. Hopefully go on some mad enduro missions and stuff. Maybe probably hit the island too.
Mm.
That's like the main track we go to. Because all the other boys have like motocross bikes.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as they open the border from Queensland and New South Wales, I think we're going to do a weekend trip down to the island. So I'll have to get you in on that one.
Oh, sick. Yeah. Hit us up.
That'd be fucking
rad. Mad. My uncle's got a farm right near there too that we always go to. He has some like little races out there, which are pretty sick. He gets like all the old dogs out there.
What was that sand track that you guys were riding that time? I hit you up to come ride there, but you fucking never got back to me, mate.
That was just this like, sand track out the back of Newey somewhere.
Yeah, sick. That thing looks pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it was fun. It's like, gets super rough, though. I'm pretty bad in the sand. Like, I have some sketchy moments, like just trying to do, I'll try to do like 20-minute motos or something, like just so I'm, like, because I do it for training. Like,
yeah.
And I just get so sketchy towards the end because it's like all different muscles and stuff, and I just feel so fatigued. And it's crazy.
What tyre sponsor are you?
Maxxis.
Dude, you need to run their sand tyre on the moto.
Yeah, I heard the new Maxxis moto tyres are hectic.
Yeah, they're unreal, dude. We went to Rocky and it was just full sand track. And Sam, the whole week, I was kind of skitzing. I was like, I got to get the sand tire. And then Sam's like, no, man, fuck, I'm not running it. I got a soft on there. I'm like, okay, I mean, like, everyone runs sand tires in sand. Like, that's why people do it. Like, you don't have some secret, Sam, that, like, all these other people are fucking wrong about. And then we got there and he did first practice and he was like, fuck, I'm going to get a sand tire. But like, man, they make such a crazy difference, eh? Because we got this sand track at like near our place, but we can't really ride it anymore. We sort of fucked it up. But I never rode there with the sand tire and I fucking hated riding. Like, it was fun, but it was so hard to ride. And then, you put on one of these sand tires and it just, like, makes the whole experience so much better.
You're still riding
sand, but, like, you can actually fucking move.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the problem. Like, I've got, a little tire on the back. I don't know what one it is. Just the stock one that came with the enduro. It's got, like, these tiny knobs. And
yeah.
I feel like I just go nowhere. But still, like, I'm just not good enough. Like, I went riding with a couple of other Yamaha boys, Greeny and Stefan.
Yeah.
And they're just watching them through that same track is just crazy. Like, they're just fucking floating on top the whole way. What? Just like going in every hole.
Just bored. Yeah. What got you into moto? Like, how long you been riding for?
Actually, Dad got us onto motos like when we were real young. I think I was like 4 when I had a Peewee 50. Mm. And I rode a heap when we lived up in the bush, and then got to about 12 years old, and that's when I got into downhill.
Mm.
Downhill and surfing. Oh, I'd already been surfing a bit before that, but we moved up the coast, so I stopped riding moto then and got into downhill and stuff. And then only recently just started getting back into moto again.
Mm.
Like maybe the last 5 years.
Is it good training for what you're trying to do? Like, you can actually like really get some benefit out of it?
Yeah, I think it's real good. Like, man, it's just crazy how much strength and fitness it requires to like ride one of those things for 20 minutes around a motocross track. Like, most people just don't understand that, but it's still, at the same time, it's like a little bit different. I think with downhill you're always pushing away from the bars and stuff, whereas a moto you're like, I don't know if it's like you're pulling more, like I'm just trying to hang on.
Yeah.
So like I can get arm pump on the moto real bad and just be sweet on the downhill bike.
Yeah.
And it's all different. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's, I figure it's got to help, especially like when you're just getting up and down off the pegs for like 20 minutes. You just And hanging on to such a heavy bike, you get back on the mountain bike and it just feels like you can just throw it around.
Yeah. I feel like that's the same as, you know, like if you ride a 450 but then you race a 250. Like, I mean, that was one thing that I remember Todd did heaps as a kid, is because he rode so much and he was so far away from like the teams and stuff that he was on that they couldn't keep giving him 250Fs. Like, he just literally would wear him out like a fucking pair of shoes. And so he got on a 450, and when he was real young, and like not many people sort of do that, and he just did constant motos on a 450, and like he just got fucking jacked, dude. And then he's like, when I ride a 250 now, like it just feels like nothing. So it make even more sense to go from a motocross bike to then a mountain bike, like the feeling that you'd have.
Yeah. It just feels like effortless to move it around, and especially like just the, even like the core, like everything, all the strength to hold onto it. It just feels a lot easier when you get back on the mountain bike, and especially the speed you go pretty fast on the moto.
Yeah.
So I think it helps with the fast sections.
Yeah.
On downhill.
Do you have any,
I don't know. It's also just like super fun. Like, would you rather go sit on a rower for 20 minutes or do 20 minute motos? Like,
yeah, dude.
No. I don't know.
No, I totally agree. I'm like, my jiu-jitsu is like my training for moto, you know, so I sort of do it's like, because it's all grips and like you're holding onto people essentially. Like, it's the same as a 100 kilo bike's trying to get away from you. Like, I got 100 kilo dude either like trying to fucking like smash onto you, or like you're grabbing them, they're trying to get away from you. So it's like, and I'm the same. I'm like, I don't want to do any fucking running or rowing. I don't want to do any of that shit. Like, I'll just, let me just fucking train a lot doing that. And it definitely helped my moto. Like, that was the stuff that was really what helped me enjoy motocross again, was just like actually being fit enough for it, you know?
Yeah. When I get back and like go for my first moto ride, like when I get out of quarantine, even though I'm super fit from the downhill season, I guarantee I'll feel like a bag when I go do that first moto. But then after like a few times of that, it just feels a lot funner when you actually, your muscles remember what they got to do and you can hang on.
Yeah. How much are you riding when you're, you know, I guess it's part of your off-season training. Like, are you riding heaps or?
Like mountain bikes or motos?
Moto.
Oh, moto. In the off-season, I won't like set days when I'll go out. I'll just go out when my mates are going out
because
I'm kind of cruising. But I used to, I tried to like do moto at least once a week in my training program last year, I think. But it's, I didn't have the WR then, so it was hard to be able to go to tracks once a week, and like on certain days, because I've got a program so that I got to follow, so it's got to fit in with that.
Yeah, so okay.
I'm about to run out of battery. I just got to grab me a charger.
Yeah, sweet.
Sorry, mate. Bit of a podcast rookie, eh?
Nah, it's all right, mate. Have you done many podcasts before?
Just one, eh?
Who with?
The Downtime. Downtime podcast. He's like a mountain bike guy from the UK, I think.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done a couple nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, what was I saying? With the moto, yeah. It's something I'd like to do once a week. And then, but yeah, I've never really got into a phase where I've done it consistently. It's always like, I might get out once a month, a couple times a month. Especially with the enduro training, I think it'd be beneficial. Like, cause some stages can be like 20 minutes long. So you're doing 20 minute motos where you can just hang onto a moto and suffer for like 20 minutes. Surely it's helped you out, but there's just so much road riding and stuff that there's only so much time in a week and you need a rest as well. So I just don't have the time really. So yeah, I'll probably do more riding in the off season.
Yeah. Did you get helped out with your bike through Yamaha, or did you, was just your one? Oh, that's sick.
Yeah. Through the Yamaha, the YMF, like the financial services.
Yeah. And what made you get the WR so you could go and do?
Yeah, I wanted to do a lot of trail riding because I live like near the Watergans and there's so many good tracks up there.
Yeah.
Dad always used to take them up there when we were kids.
Yeah.
So I've done like a bunch of those tracks we used to do, and I also ride my mountain bike up there a bunch.
Yeah.
So I like ride all those tracks backwards, the ones I'd ride down. It's like pretty sick.
Yeah, right.
And I just really wanted to do more enduro because I feel like it's kind of like the same as mountain biking with a motor.
Yeah.
I also wanted to be able to ride at the track. Like, and yeah, the WR has been sick for that. I've been doing both, no worries.
Yeah.
And since I can't jump properly anyway, it doesn't really worry me that the suspension's not set up for jumping and shit. I just don't jump anyway.
They just get, yeah, that's like Sam, he calls himself an ostrich, a flightless bird.
Yeah, but even if I didn't, if I was to be more serious about it, you could probably just, I think the other guys just put harder suspension in when they go to the track.
Oh, yeah, you'd be, yeah, that's not a big deal. Like you could.
So that I figured why not get the WR because I can do both.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it makes sense. They're a sick bike. Matt, my brother's been running the 350 EXE, the KTM forever, dude.
Oh,
I think the first year at Day in the Dirt, he was running like fourth in like the Coupe de Grasse 75 minute moto. And he's just, every time we come past him, every time you ride with him, he's on the horn the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. Headlight bandits.
So was, when you first were getting, so you said 7 years that you've been doing the series, what was your like roadmap out of Newey to get onto like the world circuit? What was it like? What did that look like back then?
So you get two opportunities as a junior to go race worlds for Oz.
Yep.
And they're like your opportunities to get seen by World Cup teams and kind of make a mark and get noticed to get a ride. The first year I had like a bunch of fast guys in my age group and I broke my collarbone, I think. So I missed that. And then the second year I got fourth overall in the under 19s nationals. So that was 2012. So I got selected for the world champs that year.
Yeah.
So I went over there as a junior with the Australian Federation and I got fifth at the world champs and that was second Aussie, I think.
And who was around, like who else was around then?
So I think my year then, Troy was the 2011, that was his last year because he's a year older.
Yeah.
So 2012 it was, I think Connor Fearon won, Dean Lucas was in there. Who else was there? There was Tom Crimmins, Dave McMillan. Luke Ellison and Joey Vavoda. That was our Worlds team.
Yeah, okay, cool. So,
yeah. And
what about internationals? Like, who were the international top dudes then too?
Oh, man. I can't remember. I think Lowick won. Connor got third.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to look. Yeah, I can't even remember.
Yeah.
It's so far, so long
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it's a while ago now.
But yeah, so we got to get over there. We also did two World Cups in yeah. Mont Saint-Anne and Wyndham. And back yep. then, they didn't have the junior category, so you had to qualify an elite.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty like nerve-wracking and gnarly. And I got 44th in my first World Cup. And I want to say in the 50s or 60s in my second. So I was just real stoked to qualify for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came home after that, and you're not really going to get anything as a junior unless you at least podium at Worlds, I think. So I had yeah. nothing for that next year, but I changed to – so that year I was on Orange with the Lusty Boys.
Yeah.
Johnny and Ricky Boy.
Yeah.
That was sick, just doing the odd stuff with them. So then the next year I went to like a Yeti Australia deal.
Yeah.
And it was with – a guy named Paul Rowney. He's still doing it now. He's a mad dog as well. And he kind of helped me tee up a bit of support from the Factory Yeti guys that year. So I went over in a van with me, Dave, Joey, and Luke.
Yeah.
We got this normal size transit van for four of us and just all slept in the back, like biggest rookies. We could have got like something decent, like a bit bigger for the same price, but we had no idea what we were up to.
Just cooked it.
Yeah, cooked it. Went over there for 6 months and did, yeah, all the races from the back of a transit, which is pretty gnarly. It was sick fun, but would never do that again, eh?
Like yes, that's one of those things, eh? Once it's like the whole time you're doing it, you're just like, this is fucking crazy. And then when it's actually done, you're like, man, that was epic, but never doing yeah. that again.
Yeah, like we would... I think we stole a couple lounge cushions for the back and we would pull all the shit out every night to put the lounge cushions in and just sleep across the back. Like just four people with stuff for a whole season. The thing was just shock us to the top. Like one time we were leaving Morzine and Dino was flying over from home and he needed a lift to a race and he flew to Geneva, which is on the way, still like 12 hours from Andorra. Anyway, we picked Dean up. We had no room in the van. I don't know how we fit his bike and bags. And we started driving to Andorra from there. It's like, I think it's like 12 hours or something. Or it took us 12 hours. Probably should have been 12 hours. And we got lost a bunch of times, like just going off the map because we had no like data and stuff. And we finally got there at like 5 in the morning and then we like just parked up at the bottom of the track and like tried to get a couple hours sleep. And I think Dave and Joey were in the back. One was across the seats and one was on the floor. And then I was in the front across the seats and Joey was on the floor with like around the gear stick. And then Luke, he climbed up on top and slept on the top of the van outside with like nothing. It would have been so cold. It's like a bunch of mad stories like that, but man, just could not live like that again.
But it's one of the things that like, fuck, you've got to do that shit, eh? Like it's so special when you can like look yeah. back on stuff like that.
Good memories for sure. Just, yeah. I think we ate salami baguettes for 6 months straight, like living off 10 euros a day, eh?
Yeah. How'd you get the cash to do it back then?
Mum and dad helped me a lot, but I got a job with he's one of my good mates still. His name's Tim Butler and he's a stainless plumber back home, and I got a job with him straight out. I started with him in year 10 just doing weekends, And he's a mad frother as well, like riding. So we'd like train before work or after work, and he'd take me shuttling and stuff. So he was like a big part in helping me save up, because there would always be a job for me, like between races and stuff. And like he would make sure I could still work and train and go to school. And like, it was a big help from him and my parents.
Yeah, it's so cool. Like, there's so many guys like that are in all the industries that, you know, they're sort of like so pumped on the sport and want to help different guys out. And then they end up being like these, I guess, the people that can sort of facilitate that in between transition where people are trying to earn a ride, you know. Because I feel like mountain biking is cool in the sense that you can go from privateer to factory guy. Like, it's not like moto, where I feel like it's very, very rare to be a privateer that ends up making it on like a factory team. Whereas I feel like in mountain biking, you kind of almost have to, right?
Yeah, I guess with the motos and stuff, like all the part, like the factory parts in the engine and stuff would just make such a difference. I don't really know, but for downhill, you get the little factory bits that help out a lot, but really, like, you could go good on a stock bike.
Yeah, what's that like? You can do just as good in downhill on a, like, not stock, obviously, like, you'd put the best of everything
most stuff is available to everyone. That's the thing. Like, at the start, like, there'll be a bunch of guys running prototype stuff at the start, but eventually everything's available to everyone.
Yeah.
And it's all pretty good gear, so like, yeah.
Have the bikes come a long way in even just like the 7 years that you've been on the world tour? Like, obviously the wheel size has changed, but is everything else, like, you can really notice the difference?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, just since I've started racing, first off, it was 26 inch and like everyone was running real small bikes, I guess, for like the technical sections. And then it was like crazy when it was starting to go to 27.5 and the bikes were like, I think they were getting a little bit bigger. That was maybe 2016, and then it was like another massive like change, crazy thing when people started deciding to run 29 inch wheels. And then bikes got longer and slacker, and I don't know, like, you take a bike from now versus 2012 when I was first started my World Cups, it's insane. Like, the bikes fit me and taller people a lot better now, which is good for us.
But I was gonna say that probably makes like a difference for you, because what, you're like 6'2"?
Yeah,
so it's like that's a lot more room that you've got to sort of move around now. Yeah,
you just feel way more comfortable, eh?
And what about, like, how far does the suspension and stuff come in that sort of time as well? Like, does the suspension and brakes and stuff get better as well?
Everything's just better. Like, just little increments, little developments, I guess, over every couple of years. Everything's just getting like fine tuned to be just a little, I feel like it gets a little bit better each year. Like, the suspension and stuff, especially on my enduro bike this year, I felt so good on it. Just super supple with it being able to ramp up. Whereas back in 2012, I remember I was just bending shock bolts in my bike because you couldn't get any ramp on the tuning.
Yeah,
I was just like bending four shock bolts a weekend from bottom outs, and it was same in the forks. Whereas now there's they make it like a lot more adjustable, but it's not too technical that it's so hard to do by yourself. There's not actually that much adjustment. The just stock version is just way better than it was.
Yeah, that's like I run those cone valves in the 350, the forks for the Rocky race. And man, the difference that it makes, it's not the it's not like the it's not like it's going to make you faster instantly, or like it's this night and day thing where like you're now a better rider, but just like the feel that you had, like I was saying to people, it almost is like I'd look at a bump and then I'd be able to go, oh, that should make the bike do this. And whatever like in your head you think it should do is pretty much what it does. Whereas on like stock stuff, you can look at a bump, you can think it's going to do something, but it'll kind of do more or less than you think. Whereas like stuff, it was so one-to-one. And then you could just feel like pretty much what you're saying. It's like in the choppy stuff, it's like really nice and supple, and you're like, oh, that's like sick. It's got like a dead feeling almost. It doesn't feel like active. But then you'd like flat land something, and then it was just you land on the gas and you just keep going straight. You're just not having like the whack, like it's coming through your hands, and just like, fucking, what did I just hit?
Yeah, I feel like that's the biggest change in suspension for us. It was always so hard to get the best of both worlds with the older stuff, whereas I feel like you can pretty much do that now.
Yeah, like, and then imagine what it's going to be like in 5 years from now.
Yeah, dude, they'll be having like gimbals on your wheels and your bike will just be hovering.
Oh, that's fucking funny. It's
crazy.
Yeah, dude.
No. I just wonder how far they can go with it all, before it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, before that. But, yeah, I mean, you sort of think that with everything, eh? You're just like, what could they do? Yeah. But they always do something.
They always do something.
Is there the one thing too that I've wondered, like being kind of not in the downhill world, is there like a bike to be on? Because it's like, it, you know, in moto that when Dunge was on the KTM 450, it was like that was the best bike that you could be on, and everyone wanted to be on that bike. Does downhill have a version of that, or is it, you know, because it's sort of like head angle, wheelbase, you know, like there's sort of geometry, there's not a motor at play, everyone's using kind of the same suspension, so is there a difference where there's like, this is the downhill bike to be on?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of good bikes, and different people ride different mountain bikes better, so there was like a year, or was it last year or the year before, like Brooke was really struggling on the GT, and then Martin Mays, I think he got second. He won a World Cup and then got second at World Champs. Like, I don't know. I think people suit different, like different riding styles suit different bikes different. And I feel like there's a lot of ways you can customize a bike to fit you.
Yeah.
And make it work for you. So.
And what's like in mountain bikes, like what sort of stuff are you chasing around to sort of make a bike feel different?
Yeah, you can get like angle sets and stuff to change the headset, reach, like the Canyon comes with all reach built into it. So I can just change per track if it's fast, flat out, I can change my reach on the frame from short, like a middle setting or a long setting.
And what is that? What's that exactly changing on the bike?
It would change the whole wheelbase and the whole steerer tube coming out of the forks is coming, moving in the frame.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then same with the rear end, it's got a short and long setting so you can change the whole wheelbase to make it more nimble and snappy or longer and better on high speed stuff. Like that's one of the sick things about the downhill bike we ride.
Yeah, right.
It's just got all that adjustability. Whereas normally, if you want to change that shit, you got to muck around with special headsets, and you can't get, because the headset hole is only so big, you can only get like 5 mm forward and back. Yep. Whereas the Canyon's just got like an ovalized top piece with a piece that goes inside, and then you can change to all those settings.
No way.
Which is pretty sick. Yeah. And then other things I do is adjust your bar height. You can make your brakes more powerful with bigger discs, like more snappy. You can, adjust all the suspension to how you want it. Like, I definitely wouldn't, like everyone in downhill runs different sort of suspension setups, I think. Well, not everyone, but each guy's got like me and Dino used to run totally different setups and we were on the same team. So that's another thing with like, I don't think there's one bike that's the fastest because everyone runs such different setups. Like me and Dean were both riding the same bike and both bikes felt totally different, eh? It's just
whatever
someone's comfortable on, eh?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you could set, like his bike was just set up super different. Because I guess that's the same on...
Yeah,
that's the same
his bike
on...
felt horrible to me and I bet you my bike felt horrible to him.
So what sort of shit would he be doing different to you?
He would run super low bars. So if I rode that, I'd feel like I was going like over the front all the time. I think he changed it a bit, but when I first started racing with Dina, he ran super stiff suspension, like felt like it didn't even work. Just so stiff, which obviously is good in like fast, flat out sections to stay on top of the rough stuff, but it doesn't track well.
Yeah, and then like you'd feel like you'd want to push in turns probably too, eh?
Yeah, stuff like that. And then we'd just run like different tires. I was always on, or maybe not. I think we ran the same tires actually. But sometimes he'd run like a Minion tire and I'd run the Assegai, both like Maxxis tires, but they just do different things. And then what else would he run? That's probably about it. Different grips and stuff.
Well, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I feel like that probably makes the sport a bit... Like, because you look at, like, those Yamahas in the 250 class, like, they're just so much better. Like, they pretty much got every single hole shot in the outdoors and Supercross this year. Like, they're just fucking insane amounts better. And it's like, there's, like, two sides to that argument. It's cool in the sense that you can strive to be on, like, the best bike and it can give you, like, this advantage and you sort of, like, earn your way to that and then it helps you win. But then at the same time, it's just like, it can be a little bit boring because it's like, all right, well, they're just literally going to get every fucking hole shot. It's going to be like four of those bikes out front every single time. But, you know, with downhill, it just really feels like it does come just solely down to like the rider.
Yeah. Yeah. In saying that, like, I don't think you can set up every single bike good. Like, it's still got to be a good bike, but there's just a lot of good ones out there.
Yeah. Right
now. Okay. So, and I think taking the engine out of it takes a massive part out of what would make it better than another one. Like, cause the rider's the engine. So.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Huh? Yeah. You're just like this complete. Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So what's the goals for 2020, mate? I gotta give old Brookie McDonald a call after this. Yeah. So I'm gonna we're doing quarantine diaries with the boys today.
Yeah, nice. Who else you got?
Who's that?
You got Eddie.
Yeah. Eddie's coming on. He's lucky last. Bulldog. And then Brooke. I text fucking Troy, but he didn't text me back. The dog.
Yeah, he's still racing.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he'll be back after Portugal. There's two more World Cups. That's what I was saying. I chose not to do them so I could get home and have a quick rest. Because the downhill guys don't have to start till, I think, end of April.
Oh, but so they got another month. You got the enduro.
They got another month and a bit off, yeah. Goals for next year. I'm pretty keen to have a crack at the full enduro series. And if I can keep getting on the podium, it'd be nice to get like a top three in the overall.
Yeah.
That's probably my goal. And then I'm keen to do world champs and stuff, which, if I get selected, as I said before, it's always like one of my favorite races. So it'd be cool if I could go good there. And then I might even do like a few e-bike races because they're kind of bursting on the scene. And they're like, I think they're in the same spots as the EWS ones, just like there's a couple on different weekends. So be worth just doing a couple, I think.
Dude, talk about the e-bike thing real quick. I fucking absolutely love e-bikes. Like, they're the sickest shit, I reckon.
Yeah, they're hectic, eh?
Dude, much fun.
It's just a lot more enjoyable. Like, I feel like mountain biking, when you've got to pedal up the hill or XC riding, it really kind of sucks until you get to a certain fitness. and it makes it like you're not in the hurt box, like you're actually enjoying it. So with e-bike riding, you can kind of just go out and have fun and not hurt at all, and do twice the amount of riding. And dude, sometimes I feel like the weight of the e-bikes feels sick.
Dude, I was gonna ask you. Yeah, I was gonna ask you if that was the same for you, because like, man, there's like, I did a bunch of e-bike riding at Smithfield through through like all the Smithfield sort of enduro trails, and like, you know, even I rode up fucking Worlds, dude. I did Worlds on a Levo.
Oh yeah,
like did the rock garden and everything.
Yeah,
I thought I fucked the Levo, dude. Like I smashed the like where the motor is on a rock down the down the
is
rock
that
garden.
Your one?
Nah, it was Glenn's. Nah. Well, it was it was a world trail one. I don't have one. I'd fucking love to get one.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I actually think that they handle better than the normal enduro bike, because there's just this extra weight. It's down low, and there was some shit that I was doing in turns on the e-bike that I couldn't hit this turn the same way like on just a regular bike. I just wouldn't, the weight, I don't know. I just feel like it wouldn't bring me back out of a turn, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the weight's a weird one, because with enduro, you couldn't run a bike that heavy, because on the short uphill sprints and like sprinting out of turns, you just couldn't pick up your speed as fast. Whereas like with the downhill, I kind of wanted to try testing with some weights and stuff after I first rode like my e-bike down a track, because it just felt sick. It felt real planted. And yeah, as you said, the weight just felt down low, and I don't know, it felt kind of gave you a bit more confidence to push and like not getting chatted over bumps as much. But I feel like it would be better for you too, because you used to ride in moto, so
heavier. And the thing is, like, I don't want to fucking do mountain biking. Like I got too much, like I've got a sick mountain bike. I got like a good stumpy there, but I just don't really want to ride it. And it's not like, it's purely just like my own personal, like I got other shit going on. Like I can't be tired for jiu-jitsu, cause then I just get fucked up. And then I'm already tired for moto from jiu-jitsu. So I just can't really add another thing in that's going to make me tired. But
yeah,
if I had an e-bike, I'd ride all the time, because I'd still be doing like the skill-based component of riding, and I would be able, like I'm behind bars and you're testing your reactions and you're still hitting turns and you're getting all of like the skill-based stuff out of riding a mountain bike, which I absolutely love. But
yeah,
I don't want to be that tired, and I'm done with like trying to be good at mountain biking. Like I just would like to, if I mountain bike, I just want an e-bike. Yeah.
I think when I retire, I won't have a normal bike. I'll just have a fleet of e-bikes, eh?
Well, dude, another awesome thing. So like my dad and my parents have e-bikes, and they love it. They go out every single weekend, and it's like they're in their 50s. Like they, and why the fuck would my mom and dad want to go and like grind it out up the hills
for that? I want to get dad on one too, because it's just makes it so much more enjoyable. They're still like doing exercise, and it's just way easier, not grinding uphill like you say.
Yeah, and
it just like opens up way more options. My uncle's real into it, and he gets out so much. He would get out most days, and he's lost a shit ton of weight, like in e-biking. Like he's still fit and still doing lots of riding.
Yeah,
it's just like, that's the other thing. You can still go as hard on an e-bike if you want.
Yeah,
like you got the option to still put yourself in the hurt box if you want to.
Yeah, but yeah,
you can
totally
cover
agree.
More ground and do more riding in the same amount of time. That's the thing I like about it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you're like, for my dad, for example, it's like he's got fucked up knees and he's, you know, in his late 50s. It's like he wants to do some exercise that he can enjoy doing. And it's like, you know, you can go and if he did like 12 Ks around our local trails on a normal bike, he'd just be over it. And it's like he's maybe done like three descents in that time. But you put him on an e-bike and he'll do 35 Ks, hit eight descents, and he'll be as tired as he was if he did his 13 Ks. But he's done eight descents instead of three. And the whole time that he's pedaling and shit, he can actually talk to the boys he's riding with or talk to mom. And just the whole thing, it makes so much more sense. And then I think, like, when you look at the, just like the industry perspective, you're just taking all these barriers for entry out of the sport. And then
it's getting way more people in.
Yeah. And then more people means more bike shops, means more bike sales, means more merch, means more need for racing, which means more people being fans of the guys that are racing the best, which means more investment in bike parks. Like, that, you know, there's such an economy of scale that you can apply to mountain biking, I think, because of e-bikes. And yeah, it's gonna be fucking super, super good for the industry.
Yeah, I've heard a bunch of people say like e-bikes are the number one sellers at the moment and like lately. So yeah, it can only be good, I reckon. There's some serious e-bike haters out there, but they'll come around. It's just like the whole 29-inch wheel thing everyone was hating at the start, and then no one gives a fuck in a couple of years once everyone actually likes them.
Yeah, 100%. Does Canyon do a good e-bike?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to get one for the off-season.
Oh, you haven't got one yet?
Nah. I've had a little ride on it at team camp, but they've just come out with a new one, so I'll be whacking up some edits on that hopefully in the off season.
I want to see some e-bike slaps.
Yeah.
Get them big boy tires fucking really drifting.
Get them sliding, eh? Twice the amount. It's so much. I've done like a bit of filming on an e-bike before too. It's so much quicker. You ride down, film. You ride straight back up the track.
Mm.
Ride down. So quick. Obviously, you got to make sure there's no one else riding, but it's like, yeah, you're not pushing fucking all day.
E-bikes for president.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, dude. I'm glad we got to have a bit of a hangout. It's cool to hear about some of your 2020. And we'll do it again. I definitely we'll get down your way. We'll do a road trip once they open up. They got to be opening the border pretty soon.
Yeah, what's the story with that? I thought it was all open now because that's how I'm getting home without quarantine.
So Adelaide, South Australia to New South Wales, probably all sweet. But I think Queensland's still pretty much keeping everyone out for the time being.
Oh, true.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me, and let us know when you're down riding.
I'm keen. It'd be sick to get the tour, and maybe I'll try and get a fucking e-bike as well. That's the other thing about e-bikes is like I could actually go for a ride with you and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Dino always Dino actually rides the e-bike with his buddies that ride normal bikes. But it should be the other way around.
I've rode with him, like because he's got the two e-bikes, and I rode with him. Yeah. When he come and did the podcast, we got lost as fuck in Narang. But we did the e-bike thing, and it's pretty rad because you can actually like keep up with somebody that rides a lot.
Yeah, that's how I'd still, that guy that I told you I was working with, Timbo, he comes on training rides with me still sometimes on his e-bike.
And like
up the hills, I'm like just slogging trying to keep up with him, and he's just like cruising along.
Telling you his life story.
Yeah, and like normally, like I couldn't go on a training ride with him because I can't. It's a training ride; you got to go a certain pace. So, with the e-bike, just makes it so we can still ride together.
Yeah, well, I'll try and get one up, and we'll do it. We'll do a sick little weekend, maybe camp at the island, and not hit some jumps together.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon, eh?
Catch you, mate.
All right, see you, bud.